You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me, once again, John Williams. Economist John Williams has been with us a number of times in the past. He is an independent economist. He is a Dartmouth grad, bachelor's degree in 1971, MBA from Dartmouth's Amos Tuck School for Business Administration. And those were the days before we had any significant amount of great inflation. It was great inflation. Now everybody goes, I don't know if it's true with prestigious schools like Dartmouth and Harvard and Yale. I wouldn't be surprised there's some truth about it. But the point is that we have a lot of inflation, and I believe that degrees aren't worth what they used to be. John went there to Dartmouth, has a degree. But what's most important about John is that he has remained independent, unlike most economists who end up at the Federal Reserve and then are owned by the Federal Reserve, the government. The propaganda never stops. And thank God for people like John Williams, who has remained true to the truth, has really remained true to looking for what is actually true, as opposed to what the establishment wants us to believe is true. The website is shadowstats.com, shadowstats.com. Thanks for joining me again, John.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
Always good to talk to you. You are, someone that, well, I've known you for at least a couple, 3 decades or so now, and never get tired of reading. I get tired of hearing what the government's saying all the time, and frankly, it's like a broken record. But you have measured, you have looked at things in a way, you know, comparing apples to apples, the apples of 1970 with the apples of 2017 and so on and so forth, instead of changing the yardstick. But John, I want to start our conversation because you are known for believing that we're heading for some very serious inflation problems, indeed hyperinflation. So I'd like to start out with a question from a friend of mine named Barry Downs, and he has been a guest on our show at least once or so in the past. He is the son-in-law of the late great Federal Reserve economist and Harvard professor Goldbug, John Exter. And John was a renowned deflationist, believed that the more money we print, the more we would suck ourselves into a deflation, and that certainly has seemed to play out to a great extent. But Barry wants me to ask you, given the fact that our economy is in such dire shape, and I know you believe it is, how can we get to hyperinflation when there is simply everything, excess of everything, it seems, and there's no demand pull or cost push or anything like that, those terminologies going on. And he points out they printed huge amounts of money, M2 has grown dramatically, and yet it's like almost like pushing on a string. So Barry wonders, how do we get to hyperinflation in this environment, John?
Well, in terms of the hyperinflation, it's only a matter of time unless the government's able to bring its long-term finances under control. As things stand now, you have, in terms of unfunded liabilities, net present value. I mean, the cash you need in hand today to cover your long-term liabilities and the federal debt and such, in excess of $100 trillion. There's no way that can ever be covered from normal operations, so that unless you have a major overhaul of the system, and I think politically that's not too likely, but it's always a chance, particularly with a new administration, that dooms you to not being able to pay off your debts in normal fashion, so you start printing the money to pay off the debts, which gives you the hyperinflation. And Alan Greenspan was very gracious in describing the circumstance there back in, I believe it was 2011, when the S&P downgraded the government debt.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Oh, there's no risk of the U.S. defaulting on its debt because all its debt's denominated in dollars. All it has to do is print the dollars."
Mm-hmm.
And from that standpoint, he's actually right.
Sure.
They just print the dollars and you end up with a hyperinflation. But the problem in recent years has been we were heading in that direction. The banking system effectively collapsed. The Fed came in and began to do whatever it had to do to keep the system afloat, to keep it from collapsing. It created whatever money it had to create, spend, lend, guarantee, in order to keep the system from collapsing. And they were successful in keeping the system from collapsing, but they never did anything to address the underlying fundamentals that led to the crisis, such as addressing the economy, addressing the long-term solvency issues, and addressing a lot of the fundamental problems with the banking system. Here we are some period later, and all the central bank intervention led into quantitative easing, and when that first was done, it looked like they were going to be expanding the money supply very rapidly because they, as they were buying up the treasuries and such from the banks, you saw a big surge in the monetary base, which had been their traditional tool for targeting money supply growth. But they didn't let the banks lend the money that they were, the cash that they were getting into the system, which would have helped the economy. Instead, the banks had to deposit the cash they were getting back with the Fed as excess reserves. So it didn't get into the system. Quantitative easing played out. They bought well over, with the mortgage-backed securities, I guess almost $5 trillion worth of securities, which they're still holding. The treasuries, which are about $2.5 trillion there, they're holding, and when they get paid interest by the treasury, they refund the interest to the treasury. Effectively, they've monetized $2.5 trillion worth of government debt, which should be an inflationary, and I think we're heading back into that mode of just rapid monetary debasement. Now, what you've seen recently in the last year or two, actually since last half of 2014, so we're going on now 3 years, has been an extraordinarily and unfundamentally sound rally in the dollar, largely tied to Fed jawboning or direct government intervention to prop the dollar. I'll tie that back to the circumstance in the Ukraine with Russia. At the time that Russia was upsetting what appeared to be the expectations by the Obama administration, we said we wouldn't target target sanctions against Russia, but we would against certain individuals. Well, at the same time that those individual sanctions were put in place, within 2 to 3 days, the price of oil collapsed and the dollar rallied, and I'll contend that was basically aimed at providing some financial penalty to the Russians for what for what they were doing. And as we went along there, the Fed did what it could to try and prop the dollar by talking up how they were going to, they're backing off about from the quantitative easing. They're going to raise interest rates, get interest rates back to a normal level, and that went on and on and on, and almost, I think it's almost 2 years before they actually raised interest rates. It's all jawboning.
Yeah.
So whatever they jawbone, that would help prop the dollar. And we've had a couple of rounds of rate increases, but again, there's an awful lot of jawboning there, and that jawboning, again, has been in support of the dollar. All of that presumes, and what the Fed is saying is, oh, you know, the economy's coming back now. We can raise interest rates. That's nonsense. The economy's not coming back. It never recovered from the crash into 2009. It hit bottom in 2009, came off its bottom a little bit, but it never got back to its pre-recession high. And if you look at the way the economies are normally defined and economic growth is defined, in order to have economic expansion, you have to regain the level of economic activity seen before the downturn. We've never done that. We have officially per the GDP, but you look at other good quality series such as industrial production. Industrial production actually was up in one quarter of expansion. Expansion comes after above the prior high, and then mm-hmm. filled in again. Manufacturing never got to expansion, never fully recovered. Mm-hmm. And right now what we're seeing with the manufacturing sector is the longest period of non-expansion ever in the history of the industrial production series, which goes back 100 years. It's worse than seen in the Great Depression. It's worse than seen in the realignment of manufacturing after World War II. We've never seen anything like this in modern times. The economy is faltering. We're beginning to see it in some of the headline numbers. There's a lot of gimmicking in the numbers. But the problem is that the Fed does not have a strong economy on which to base boosting its interest rates. And if you read their minutes, they allow for adverse financial circumstances, I think is the way they put it, that could force them back into expanding their portfolio, getting back and buying treasuries again. Yeah. My contention is you're going to see the economy, headline economy, weakening enough in the months ahead that the Fed is not going to continue to tighten. I mean, maybe there's another rate hike, but I tend to doubt that. They're going to instead have to move back towards quantitative easing, mm-hmm. and expand quantitative easing again to help the banks. The Fed's primary function is to keep the banking system afloat.
Let me just ask you, John, what you're saying is that we're continually having this weak economy no matter how much money is being printed or created and put into the system. And what Barry is suggesting is, why will that change? I know your answer is that the dollar is going to come under pressure, that the dollar is going to – it seems to me what you're saying is there's going to be a confidence game in the dollar. Now, I'm looking right now at something I talked to you about before we came on this show, I think a week or so ago. I'm noticing that there is a huge plug number in the Treasury's numbers of something they call other. $745 billion in the last 2 years has been an undefined source of funding for U.S. Treasuries. And I'm suggesting, and I think you and I talked about this, probably it's backdoor quantitative easing that's never gone away to keep the interest rate down, because if any kind of significant increase in the interest rate is going to tank this baby really bad.
Yes.
And then what happens, John, if people finally start to understand that the emperor is wearing no clothes, the confidence game is over, the con game is over, and the Fed no longer will be able to protect the banks, you'll see a currency that just evaporates, and then in terms of the currency's value, your loaf of bread is going to cost hundreds of dollars, perhaps something like that. Who knows?
Well, the shell game they've got going with the banks, they're going to continue as long as they can. Again, their primary function is to keep the banks floating. But what's going to happen as they start to revert back to the quantitative easing, which is, I think, what the markets are beginning to sense.
Right.
Beginning to see some weaker numbers. All the benchmark revisions we're getting in on things such as industrial production and the trade all suggest that the economy's not been as strong as it's been. And where the all this talk about raising rates has propped the dollar, once Fed policy shifts away from raising rates, number one, and number two, actually moving back towards quantitative easing, which will happen, then you're going to see a massive decline in the dollar, or maybe even a panic decline. But mm-hmm. if that dollar sells off sharply, that's going to spike near-term inflation. Mm-hmm. Where that happens, and if you look at inflation over the last couple of years, really since the crisis, the bulk of the movement in the CPI has been tied directly to the big volatility in gasoline prices, tied to the big volatility in oil prices. Mm-hmm. And as the dollar weakens, oil prices rise. There's an 80% negative correlation there.
Mm-hmm.
So that the you get a panic sell-off in the dollar, guess what? You're going to see a spike in oil prices. You're going to see a spike in gasoline prices denominated in dollars. You're going to see a big spike in domestic inflation, headline inflation. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be felt very heavily by an already liquidity-strapped consumer, and I think that's going to be provide the basis for people rethinking things and give you the basis from which the hyperinflation will build. The long-term insolvency of the U.S. Guarantees it, and it's a matter of global confidence at this point. You saw at the time of the S&P downgrade how quickly you can get a panic in the global markets. You're seeing a net dumping of treasuries now. Nobody wants to hold the treasury outside the United States because long-term they know the dollar is not worth anything. Putting all that aside, right now you do have all sorts of games being played in the markets. Mm-hmm. But the long-term, you don't want to have your assets in U.S. bonds.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, look, John, you know, I'm looking at some Treasury statistics that show for the longest time, from 1776 to 2007, about 47% of the Treasuries were purchased by intergovernmental, most of that being, in recent years, being Social Security.
Right.
The foreigners have come in with large amounts of money, and now they're 43% in the period of 2008 to 2014. 43% was foreign money. Now it's, over the last 2 years, negative 12%.
Yep.
And IG, that is Treasury, that is Social Security, is way down in part because of demographics and part because I would suggest, and you could tell me what you think, wages are way down from where they were, so I imagine there's a lot less going into Social Security, people not working, the number of people employed are, yep, is down. And so we have something called 87% over the last 2 years from domestic sources of funding, and then the Treasury isn't clear about who that is. There's a big chunk is mutual funds. Okay, some people put money in mutual funds, $497 billion, but there's something called $745 billion of Treasury holdings over the last 2 years, Treasury purchases, $745 billion, the largest category of domestic, which the Treasury simply calls other.
Yeah.
And I'm suggesting, I wonder, and I talk to John Rubino, who's my guest next week, John thinks that that's some sort of a backdoor QE that's still coming and keeping the interest rates from rising. As you say, who wants to buy treasuries at 0% or 1% or 2% when the inflation rate is above that? So I'm wondering if they're not already pumping money into the system to try to keep rates from rising, knowing full well that a 4% long bond rate is going to be disastrous.
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
You know, I think indeed they are. And in fact, part of it's very open because what they do is not only are they holding the treasury securities that they had purchased, but they're rolling them over. I mean, a lot of them become mature, and as they mature, the government goes out and replaces them.
Uh-huh.
Excuse me, the Federal Reserve goes out and replaces them.
Right.
So that that end of it is there. It is, the Fed can do anything it wants and do all sorts of things covertly as it wants. The point is, it's. The system should not have been on the brink of collapse back in 2008. That's what the Fed had been put in, among other things, had been put in place for.
Mm-hmm.
They were not successful in preventing the crisis, and they're doing everything, as is the federal government, to prevent the system from collapsing. Anything.
AIG,
which is the largest insurance company in the world, to keep the system from collapsing. It didn't make any difference whatever they had to spend. You may recall when the crisis was breaking and Congress, I think, had to put forth together something like a $700, $800 billion bailout package for the system. Right after Congress passed that, despite all, there's a lot of argument back and forth, the next day Bernanke wrote himself a check for $700 billion in the system. The Fed can create the money as it wants.
Yeah.
And that's what lies ahead of us. The system's not solvent. It's not stable. And the stability in the system is going to get a lot worse. And once you start to see the flight from the dollar, you're going to see a lot of dumping of treasuries as well. Right now where the dollar's been relatively strong, although it's been weak in the last month or so, it's not a good time to own bonds, good time to own U.S. stocks. But when the outlook for the dollar tanks and the fundamentals here are just absolutely miserable for the dollar, it's it's well over like 20-30% easily.
Right.
Then as the dollar turns and you start to see that basic selling or start to get a panic selling, I would expect you're also going to see a parallel selling in the stock market and in the bonds.
Right. So it seems to me, John, it really boils down to confidence. Confidence in the, let's say, what is nothing less than a counterfeit system, a system that is created. It's not less than the Mafia Don printing money in his basement, only these guys are doing it legally because they have the power of the, you know, the guns behind them.
Yep.
To force us to accept the money, and we're trying to do it globally. We don't have time. I see my engineer is telling me we still have a couple minutes left, but globally, the U.S. has used its military to push the dollar on other countries, and I think you're looking at China and Russia and some of those countries saying, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore, frankly.
Yep.
And
yep.
So, and they're not buying, they're getting rid of, setting up their own trading system now to use their own currencies, and they're shunning the dollar as much as possible for trade. They're setting up their own gold system, their own infrastructure to compete with the United States dollar, the hegemony of the dollar. If its days are limited, then I think that's your trigger, John. And you've been calling for hyperinflation for the last few years. It hasn't happened yet. But it's like, when can you call for inflation? How do you know when confidence is broken? That you, if you can predict that, then I think you can predict when we go into a hyperinflation. And God help us when that happens. That's all I can say.
Well, I agree with you. And the problem is, I think we're getting very close to that break in confidence. Watch number one, the economy. As it continues to soften, the Fed's going to be in an impossible position, but they'll do what they have to do to save the banks.
Right,
they move
because they're there for the banks.
Rates, that'll shake the confidence in the dollar. I mean, that's been the primary prop under the dollar, and major dollar selling and panic dollar selling should take care of the rest.
All right, we're going to have to leave it go at that, John. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for your thoughts. Always good, and people should go to shadowstats.com. Sign up for John's letter. It's not an expensive letter. It really isn't, and well worth the money. If you care at all about an independent view of what is going on in the economy, John Williams is the place to go to. Thanks, John, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. Next week, we're going to have Michael Bebek of RN Resources. John Rubino will be my guest as well, and hopefully Michael Oliver is back, who, by the way, is predicting that we are now in a bear market for the dollar and for T-bonds, and in a bull market for gold and commodities in general. Works very well with John Williams' thesis. We do have to say goodbye until then. Till next week, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Dynacert is a global leader in carbon emission reduction technologies. Created for use in diesel engines, the hydrogen unit has been proven to reduce carbon emissions by up to 40%, increase torque, improve engine oil quality, and provide up to 19% in fuel savings. Our leading-edge technology is designed for tractor trailers, rail, marine, and newly developed for diesel engine cars. Reducing the amount of greenhouse gases provides benefits to the environment, to communities and businesses, and to our shareholders.
Tri-Metals Mining is a growth-focused mineral exploration company exploring and developing its near-surface Gold Springs gold-silver project in mining-friendly Nevada and Utah. Tri-Metals has only drilled less than 10% of the gold targets at Gold Springs, and it already has a gold resource with a robust preliminary economic assessment. Tri-Metals believes that with further drilling, there is a significant potential to discover 3 to 5 million ounces of gold at Gold Springs. Tri-Metals shares are listed on the OTCQX and the TSX under symbols TMIAF and TMI respectively, and its website is trimetalsmining.com.